everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thank you for joining us here. Nice April morning, Tim. It's creeping into t-shirt weather. We're not quite there yet. It did snow 2 days ago, but we're getting there. It's a beautiful day. We have a guest today, a controversial podcast potentially. Could get heated. I don't know what's going to happen, but we'll introduce him in a second. Tim, how you doing?
I'm good. It's been t-shirt weather for about a month here in Charlotte, North Carolina, so I'm great. I'm doing great.
I wonder how the weather is in Poland. I wish we could ask somebody. We actually have someone here. Oh, my goodness. So I've been talking a little trash about the Arizona Coyotes of late. Rightfully so. They're a terrible franchise. I get some heat, and this is one of their biggest fans. He does a podcast on the Coyotes, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong, Mikhail. I should introduce you now. It's Mikhail Kolchinski. He's a diehard Coyotes fan. He wanted to come on the show. He challenged me on social media. So I said, you know, let's get him on the show. We'll hash this out. I want to hear what he has to say because I'm wrong sometimes. And I want to be corrected if I'm talking wrong. So welcome to the show, Mikhail.
Hey, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Great. I mean, just talking trash about the Coyotes a little and just of late, right?
Oh, well, I think it's been pretty consistent since they traded me and we started the podcast. I've been a little hard on them, but in my opinion, justified, because, well, Tim, do you want to break down everything I said or Mikhail takes umbrage to, and then we can go through it bit by bit?
Sure. So there's a couple of things, and he's been, you know, pretty vocal on social media in the past. I do see those tweets, and I think you are most critical of Arizona than most teams, but I also think Arizona deserves more criticism than most teams. So I'm kind of, I see it both sides, but some of the things that he's been defending is, for example, the constant state of a rebuild and criticizing them for trading away all their players at the draft. But other teams around the league do this from time to time too. Is that right, Mikhail? Did I summarize that up?
Yeah. In Australia, yeah, that's true.
Why don't we let Mikhail talk for himself? So what don't you think is true, Mikhail, that I've been saying?
It's not like I think I totally disagree with you. I mean, I totally agree with Shane Doan when he said that they've been throwing a lot of rocks at us, but we've given them a lot of these rocks, right? Or stones. I don't know what the expression is, but
yeah.
Basically, I don't see any difference between the rebuild when the Blackhawks do it and the Coyotes do it. I mean, the concept of rebuilding, right, is basically when you trade away all the good players, preferably for draft picks, and then you try go from there and try to get as much talent as you can and fight for a better future. And yeah, sure, Blackhawks, obviously, they have done a way better job than the Coyotes in that department, but still. And I get that. I guess for many Coyotes fans, it feels like it's been one big rebuild since like 2012, probably.
Yeah.
But you have to understand that, I know, for the last 2-3 years, we actually had an ownership that actually makes choices and makes moves that actually make sense. And I think this is the first true rebuild, maybe even ever, in this organization. And I firmly believe that this time it is going to work. And believe me, I had my doubts when we acquired Taylor Hall for God knows what reason, when we acquired Phil Kessel, okay? And I remember all that John Chyka controversy and all other controversies. Believe me, I know that. But this time right now, I don't think this rebuild is any different than the ones that I know Blackhawks ones were trying to achieve, or the ones that maybe Sabres are going for right now.
Well, I think the difference is the Blackhawks are rebuilding from winning a Stanley Cup, and they didn't start the rebuild until this season earnestly, because last year they went out, they get Seth Jones, they get Marc-Andre Fleury. They earnestly tried to put a Stanley Cup contender on the ice to take advantage of Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews, the last, you know, good years of hockey they had left. So this is the first year they've done this, and they just went all in, and rightfully so. So to compare the two is a little bit off, because Arizona's been in rebuild mode for, like you said, a better part of a decade. And usually rebuild takes, what, 3 years, 4 years? And to compare them to the Sabres have never really been in a rebuild. they've just been throwing money at the wall and trying to see what sticks. I just think the Sabres have been mismanaged. It's not for a lack of trying. They've been throwing tons of contracts at everybody, whether it's the Stalls, the Skinners, the Halls, the everybody's, the Ristolainens, the everybody you can imagine. They threw contracts at everybody. It didn't stick. It was only when they traded Jack Eichel when they started to say, you know what, let's pump the brakes and try something new. My problem with Arizona is the rebuild starts with what you need: good young players. And they had that when I was there. We had a stable of good young players. We had Duclair. We had Domi. We had Tobias Ryder. We had OEL when he was in his prime. We had all these good young players, and they still traded everybody away after a good rookie season. And they didn't get much for them. And they just kept bringing on these older players, just eating cap and just getting draft picks. And it just seems like it's been a wash, rinse, and repeat every year where it's like, okay, we'll trade our good young player, we'll get a bunch of draft picks, and then next year, trade our good young players, get a bunch of draft picks, and next year, take on a bad draft contract, get a draft pick, and then, but next year. And they just keep kicking it down the line. And it's frustrating because I played for him. I want him to succeed. But at what point do you just say, this is a bad franchise? And then keep like getting disappointed when you say, oh, this is the year though. This is the year they're going to do it right. You see, that's why I critique them, because it's like, are you trying to win or are you just like not? Because it doesn't seem to me, when you can trade Chychrun and Darcy Kemper, Domi, Duclair, Strom, Garland, all these players who are good players when they got traded. I know some of them fell off, but when they got traded, they were elite players. And you got to agree with me on that. So that's where I get frustrated. You know, I don't know. Am I off base on something?
No, I think you're right. In most cases, I guess the Duclair and Domi era. I mean, I think Don Maloney went through this like long burnout syndrome. I guess I think he admitted that at some point that he really didn't feel like being a GM. He was just there for the sake of being there, whatever. And that was terrible, what was happening ever since they got to this Western Conference Finals, right? It went a little sideways, for sure. And I agree with you on that. And I didn't understand those moves there either. So that's why I'm saying this is the rebuild. This the one currently happening is the one that actually makes sense to me. And I don't think any of them before actually made any sense to me, because you don't rebuild by acquiring some superstars all of a sudden, right? That makes absolutely no sense. And then the team was owned by NHL for a couple of years. So you don't have any good moves here. I mean, you're not really earning money. You don't have like a whole ton of money. You're just trying to keep the ball rolling for the sake of rolling it, and that's it. And now, actually, this is the rebuild that I'm actually believe in. And I know this sounds like all these people saying, like, that was not the real Caviar. Yeah, I know. But seriously, this one's working for me because I see the consistency. I see the clear vision. I see the long-term ownership, finally, which I can't believe I'm even saying that as a Coyotes fan. So, yeah, that's why I think this one might just work.
Okay, so we'll move on to the next one. You critiqued me criticizing their ownership, their rink, their whole management. So what am I getting wrong on this side of it? Because we talked about the players. I think the putting the fruit is there. You can see how they're managing their players. But this one's the good one. So we'll see if you're right in the next coming years. What's going on with the ownership, the management, the rink? Everything all wrapped into one kind of what am I missing on this one?
Well, yeah, you said that the owner got arrested. And actually, that not as much of an owner as the guy that owns like 5% of shares. I think
But you did say he has what, 5%?
Yeah, he's a co-owner. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So he is an owner. Okay.
Yeah, that's the same thing as co-owner for sure.
So if I'm on a hockey team and I don't play very much and I go get arrested, do they say a player gets arrested or a guy who only plays a little bit gets arrested?
Okay, yeah.
Because there's not many people who own NHL franchises, right?
Right.
So if one of them gets arrested, as a
I remember like that there was a time like in 2018 when the Sabres president was arrested, and in 2002 when the owners, like plural, were arrested for fraud. So I can't believe you were not calling this, I know, this team to be like relocated.
If we talk about that, I will not shy away from talking about it.
Yeah, clearly it doesn't work there. It just doesn't work there.
I don't think I lied when I said their owner got arrested.
That team's a bust, right? But yeah, speaking of the ownership thing, I mean, they're not going anywhere. I mean, from what I'm standing, it doesn't seem like. Also, the ring situation. Yeah, the city of Phoenix is suing Tempe, and this is not the first time they've done that. And the mayor of Tempe said that once many times. He said that they simply are being bullied by the bigger city, and that's what Phoenix does. But also, the whole thing is they're suing the potential arena project because they think it's going to create too much noise, right? The residential area is going to be too close to the harbor, to this air harbor thing, right? But you have to remember that this airport issues those noise reports every month. And so far, the Coyotes residential area was perfectly fine. It was in the safe zone. And all of a sudden, right now, it's not. Like they drew this whole like spot. They basically erased that safe spot, and they drew this like danger zone all of a sudden. So that's kind of a bust, and that sounds actually ridiculous. Also, you have to remember that the city of Phoenix owns this airport, and they also invested like $100 million in the Phoenix Suns arena to upgrade it or whatever. So it sounds like a competition fight for me.
I know that, and that's why I think the Coyotes did something to ruin it, because they had an agreement in place that they would sign something and the people who own the condos or the apartments would not sue the airport for noise violations or whatever. And all of a sudden they retracted that and they just said, nope, never mind, we're going to sue you for even having the idea to put this here. The agreement's off. They pulled back. So why would they pull back all of a sudden when they've allowed other buildings to go in that vicinity, unless the Coyotes did something to tick them off? So that's all I was saying. And it's like something happened in this situation where Phoenix got upset and they said, you know what? Screw you guys. We're not doing this anymore. We're going to sue you. You're not building your complex here. Kick rocks. Mm-hmm. And I'm just assuming.
Also, the city of Phoenix also allowed some other residential areas.
Yeah, which further proves my point. So it's like they're letting that person do it, that person. Well, why not the Coyotes? Doesn't.
Maybe they have something against actually this particular, I don't know, ownership group, this businessman, I don't know. Whatever. I know. I don't want to accuse anyone of anything. So I'm not sure. We can't see what's happening there. But I firmly believe that there's just like some interest in not having the Coyotes or this whole complex there. And not necessarily because the Coyotes suck or whatever. And maybe there's some business thing underneath, maybe. But I don't think, I mean, I don't think this is, yeah. Okay. I'm going to go in circles. So yeah.
All right. What else was there, Tim or Mikhail? What else do you want to touch on before we shut this down and move on? Anything else you want to call umbrage on with the drop in the gloves show?
I believe the chicken trade, but I think because you said that this makes no sense, right? That the return was like really, really sucky for it. And I kind of disagree. I mean, I know that our GM was saying like, yeah, we won like two first round draft picks or whatever, right?
Three.
Or three. Yeah, three. That sounds, you know, that sounds like kind of a, I don't know, celebrity talk more than actual management talk. But I think Jacob Chychrun is not the nicest guy there is. Also, he's not the healthiest guy there is. So I say the return for the guy is actually pretty decent. And of course, Tim is right when he says opinion based. It's all matter of opinion. That's true. But I think the return that we got for him is actually pretty decent for a guy that hardly ever plays hockey. That's just my opinion.
Okay, let's just stay on this.
Like, he's like what? He's like 24, 26. He's pretty cocky. I don't know. He sounded like he already wanted to go to a Stanley Cup winning team, which also makes it kind of surprising to me that he actually Ottawa was on his yes list. So,
well, I think anywhere but Arizona at the time was his protocol. He just gave them a list of 31 teams because he wanted to get out of Arizona because he's yeah, been there for so many years. And he's like, I'm done with this city. But so the reason I said they got fleeced with Chychrun is because he's a good defenseman. I think he's a solid 3-4 guy, potentially a 2. I don't think he's a 1. He's a solid guy who's going to be a minute muncher, kill penalties, put him in the second power play unit if he stays healthy. That there's obviously that asterisk there. The reason I say they got fleeced, what did Filip Hronek get traded for? The first and a second.
Okay.
Who is he? Nobody really knows. He's a solid defenseman. Chychrun, he's been their golden nugget. Their Willy Wonka ticket they've been dangling for a couple of years now. We got Jacob Chychrun. We got him. Who wants some, baby? Come get some. They've been just dangling this to everybody for years now. And then they finally trade him to the Ottawa Senators for nothing. It's a first protected, meaning it can't be in the top five. They'll probably get a middle of the road pick for a Jacob Chychrun. Will he end up being an NHL player? I don't know. They had him under control for 2 more years at 4.6, which is a great deal. And if I'm a so-called rebuilding team and I'm trying to rebuild for the future, one of the few things I want as a GM is a guy who I can just say, boom, I'm going to plug you in for 25. You're not going to make many mistakes. You can put 30 points, 40 points on the board. Bingo, bango, bongo. Maybe they were scared by his injury history. I don't know. I would be too if I was a GM, but that's not my job. My job is to comment on it. And for a GM to say, we're not going to even begin a conversation unless it starts with 3 first-rounders. And then he trades him for 1. I'm just like, what is happening here? And then later on in the deadline, you see Filip Hronek get traded for a first. I'm like, Chychrun is better than Filip Hronek. And Filip Hronek is, there's no slighting him, but Chychrun is good. He's a moose out there. Mm-hmm. The key is when probably, he's out there.
Yeah, that's probably a matter of, I don't know, you could say propaganda a little bit. I mean, how many players you can trade for 3 first-round picks, right, in this league? I mean,
how many GMs say they want to get 3 first-rounds for a pick?
Also true. But you have to bear in mind that Chychrun actually decreased his own value especially after that legendary press conference that he gave, and he came out as like total a-hole, and it actually didn't do good. It wasn't good for the team. That's one, but it wasn't very good for himself because, like, I think it sent message to all the other GMs who probably were thinking like, yeah, who is this guy? I mean, who is he thinks he is? Right, I mean, his ego must be like to the roof, and I guess that really decreased his value as well. So I guess you have to sell that, and probably my guess is Armstrong. Clearly, he didn't think he would sell him for like three personal picks. That's for sure. But he had to do this propaganda, like sell this as I don't know, with as much hype as possible so that he could get at least, I don't know, let's say half of it. That's my guess. Also, you can't, I mean, no matter how great in propaganda you are, you can't unsee his stats, right? Like his 56 games on average. And when he's playing, he can be great. I mean, this season has been great, but last season he was like negative 200 million something, right? So yeah, he can be good, but not necessarily. So I mean, you really don't know. So yeah, I guess the return is pretty good.
I guess if he wouldn't have came out with the 3 first-rounders, I wouldn't have been so salty. But we were waiting for years for that trade, Mikhail. You know that. All right, anything else you want to touch on before I let you go?
You said also, the ugly barn that Coyotes can't even fill.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true because it's not ugly and it's actually full. Every game, and I know it's like four. I know what's the capacity? Like 46, right? 4,600 or 46 something.
46 people.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess Jesus. I heard that a million times, but it's funny each and every time. Seriously, it is a good one. But seriously, of course, it's not like NHL capacity, that's for sure, but it's actually been great there. I mean, the atmosphere, it seems like it's pretty cool. And like all other players have been praising it. I mean, I haven't heard or at least read any like criticism over this particular rink. And I know that it has some flaws. I mean, they had very little time to actually set this whole thing up. But I don't think it's as bad. I know it's an easy target for sure, right? It's like a walking meme if you think about it. But at the same time, it's actually been way better than people thought would be. So I don't think, I don't think it's ugly, and I don't think it's empty.
So, well, It might be aesthetically nice because it's brand new. I think at the end of the day, you could put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. They're an NHL franchise playing in a college arena. And the fact that they pulled it together at the last second, great. They had to play the first 19 games on the road, something crazy like that, or they went on a huge road swing. This just screams to the fact that they're a mismanaged organization, that they have to cobble things together to even get an arena to start an NHL season. This stuff doesn't happen in the AHL. So all this stuff that goes on with this franchise, at the end of the day, do you see the Arizona Coyotes being a franchise in Arizona in 5 years' time?
Yes, of course. And I see, I mean, even in 25. I mean, they're not going anywhere. I mean,
you don't think so?
No. And to all of the Canadian fans, seriously, no, they're not going to Quebec. They're not going to Houston. They're not going anywhere, seriously. And
why not? What good have they done in Arizona?
I think Maruelo, he bought this team and he bought a hockey and NHL franchise in a terrible, terrible condition. And I agree 100% here. And since then, I believe they've been trying their best to actually make something out of it. And it's a whole lot of work. If you have that much debt, if there's so much doubt in you, and I think the work they have to go through is basically gigantic, nearly impossible, but I think it is doable for them. So yeah, this transition arena, yeah, it sucks. I mean, basically, if they could have like this already like a 20,000 seat arena, downtown Phoenix, cool, but that's not happening. So they did what they could with the resources that they had. And right now they're actually trying to get this Tempe thing. And actually they're trying to buy a landfill that recently caught on fire, I believe.
Dumpster fire.
And actually they've been, I think what they're trying to achieve there is actually pretty cool. And like I said, this is the first time I believe in the ownership of this franchise. And yeah, I can't even believe I'm saying that, but they basically inherited a terrible, terrible franchise, and they have to all destroy and like rebuild again as hate.
Okay. Well, no, I love your optimism. All of those things would be great if this was like the third, fourth year of their franchise. They're almost 20 years in.
Mm-hmm.
So I just feel like you got to know when to cut bait. You got to know when to say, you know what, rip the Band-Aid off. It didn't work. Thank you for trying. We're moving on. So that's all. Otherwise, I love you for coming on. Thank you, Mikhail, all the way from Poland. Got anything to say to the listeners? Anything you want to parting words for us?
Toronto will not make it past first round, and Quebec's not getting an NHL team. Love you all.
I love it. He's going out with a bang, Tim. You gotta love that.
Thanks for coming on, man. This is great.
All right, Mikhail. Thank you very much. I'll see you on Twitter.
Yes, sir. Take care, guys.
All right. Have a good day. We'll see ya. Wow. What do you think, Tim?
He had some good points to make. And it's funny because no. Yes, he did.
Well, the arena, I'll give him the arena. I give you that. But I think all in all, I just came out on top of that debate.
Well, that doesn't mean he didn't make good points. And I think, you know, to be fair, I think the Coyotes, I do see his point about like hoping for a brighter future and thinking that like this time it's going to work. not to say that it, like, every rebuild is going to work because you collect a lot of young players and draft picks, because obviously you still got to hit on all those picks and develop those young players. But I do think they've collected probably one of the higher potential round of young players, you know, under that 20, 21, 22 year old age. The big difference is, and I think you've been saying that, you said this many times on the show, is like, you don't trust that management in that organization to turn that into success on the ice. Basically, like, before they can even get competitive, they're going to start struggling again and trade those players 2 or 3 years down the road, like they've done every time. So he thinks it's going to be different. You think it doesn't, but I do think they have a better collection of young talent than you give them credit for.
Listen, I hope my 5-year-olds don't pee the bed tonight. There's a good chance they will. So there you go. We can hope all day long, but to date, Arizona has just done nothing but disappoint us. Right? So am I not allowed to say that?
No, you are. Like I said in the beginning, the team's been the most deserving of criticism, for sure. And you look at, like, the dead contracts, and you look at the playing, they don't have their own arena.
Tim, I had a list. Weber, Hossa, Pronger, Boland, Ladd, Voracek, Datsyuk, Cassian, Brian Little. This goes all the way back to 2015.
Wasn't Tim Thomas one of them at 1.2?
Probably. I didn't go. I my hand got tired from writing names down. So yeah. I'm just like, I didn't even get into that. I didn't even get into the fact that their total salary this season right now to date is $42 million. Total for their players. They have $31 million in buried money. They pay their defense $7.5 million for the whole defense.
So some of them, they have seven dead contracts. Some of them are technically on LTIR, but that's just the logistic move. It's the dead contract. And out of those seven, four of them have never and will never ever play for their team. A couple of them are like Andrew Ladd, but even that was like, you know, that is what it is.
Buried money. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, let's move on. Good. This is a segment I want to do. So if you're a perturbed fan and you're annoyed at what I'm saying, bring it on. Let's go. We're going to have a debate. Just message us on the show, throw us a DM. We'll get you on. Mikhail was upset. Hopefully he still listens to the show. It was a great conversation. Let's have an earnest man-to-man conversation. You know what I mean? And if I'm wrong, so be it. I'll admit to it. But if you're wrong, you better admit to it. Mikhail admitted to it. There's a lot of times you're like, you know what? You're right. 100%. All right. Moving on, Tim. Let's get to some big hockey news. There are some consequential games happening this week. Huge games, big games last night. The Calgary Flames stayed up late, Tim. Eked out a win last night versus the hapless. Gosh, who'd they beat?
Anaheim Ducks.
Anaheim Ducks. I thought it was going to be a loss for the Calgary Flames. Jacob Markstrom stunk. Darth Vader comes in, stunk. Friend of the show, Milan Lucic, just rescued them from the pits of despair. Top shelf goal. Then Michael Stone out of nowhere. Game winner with like 2.5 minutes left to just give them a sorely needed 2 points that they needed, because they are in tough against the Winnipeg Jets. What other games we got to look forward to this week, Tim?
Yeah, so just speaking of the Calgary real quick, they've won 4 straight now. And so they've made up a lot of ground in the last week and a half. And the Jets have started to turn around a little bit too, because they were sliding a little bit, but they've won 2 in a row and they play each other on Wednesday night. So that's a big game that has major, major consequences. And then another one I've got my eye on too, just tomorrow night, Tuesday night, the Sabres versus the Panthers. Yes. Now, just to set the table a little bit, the Penguins lost late in the third to the Bruins on Saturday, and they didn't get a much needed point. They thought it was going to go to overtime, at least get one, but Bruins scored late. But they did beat the Flyers yesterday to gain back that second wild card spot. They leapfrogged the Panthers just by 1 point. And so the Panthers are fighting back now, and the Sabres have making things interesting, which we love to see. They're 5 points back from the Penguins for that second spot, 4 points behind from the Panthers. They have 2 games in hand on each of them, and the Sabres and the Panthers play each other Tuesday night. This is like do or die time, especially for the Panthers. So this would be a big, big game to watch.
Well, especially for the Sabres. If the Sabres lose this game, they're done.
Yeah.
Absolutely done. I think Florida can lose and still have a potential possibility to catch Pittsburgh. And the first wildcard holder, the New York Islanders, have been losing a few games. All of a sudden, both wildcard spots are up for grabs. The Islanders are sitting at 87 points. They played 78. They only got 4 games left. So if they don't get their act together, luckily for them, they're getting Matthew Barzal back, I think, this coming game. But boy, oh boy. All of a sudden, you got the Islanders in Pittsburgh. Who knows if they're going to stick with those 2 spots? You got Florida, you got Buffalo breathing down their necks. And if anybody slips up, the Senators might be able to eke in. I don't think they will, but it's 4 teams, 2 spots. Very, very exciting. And they all play each other. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. Who do you think gets in? I know I've done this 100 times with you, and every time our answers change. But as you look at the standings now, goes the Islanders, Pittsburgh, Florida, Buffalo. They're all separated by 6 points. Buffalo has 2 games on Florida and Pittsburgh, 3 games on the Islanders. So if Buffalo wins all 3 of those games, they're tied with the Islanders. Will they win all 3? I don't know. Going back to my question, who gets in, Tim, out of these 4 teams? Let me know.
I really want Buffalo to win, but I think it's going to be Pittsburgh, and then I think the 2 teams are going to stay. I really do. I want to say the Islanders would be the odd man out, but I just don't see them losing this many in a row this late in the season. I think they've got an experienced group that'll pull it together. They are on a little bit of a slide, like you said, but I think they eke it out, and maybe they even slip to that second spot. But I do think it's going to be this 2 teams stick it out. Penguins and Islanders.
I don't know. The Islanders are making me a little nervous. They have a couple days off. It's Monday now. They don't play till Thursday, but they play the Tampa Bay Lightning. But then here's the question. Does Tampa Bay really ice their team? We've seen Toronto starting to rest some players. You've seen Boston already starting to rest some players. Will we see the full Tampa Bay Lightning? I don't know. That could play a factor in all of this. But if they lose to the Lightning, they got 3 games left. I think they should run the table on those 3 games. They play the Flyers, they play the Capitals, and they play the Canadiens. That might not even be enough. So in my eyes, the way I see things now, I think Pittsburgh stays in. I like their chances. And depending on who wins this game tonight, Buffalo or Florida, that will be the second wild card holder. So Pittsburgh gets the first wild card. Florida or Buffalo gets a second wild card. I would much rather see a Buffalo Sabres team get into the playoffs. I think they'd be exciting to play against and to watch. Tage Thompson, gotta love that. Dylan Cousins, gotta love that. Lots of young guys who could get their feet wet in the playoffs. Going forward, 5 years from now, I think this does more for the Sabres franchise than it does for all 3 of these franchises. Pittsburgh's on their way down. Islanders are on their way down. Florida, who knows where they're headed. But I would love to see the Sabres get in. Does it make you nervous, Tim? Here's a question for you. Because the Bruins just eked by the Penguins, if the standings hold and the Penguins end up with that second wildcard spot, you nervous?
No. I was going to ask you the same thing. I think the only team that makes me nervous in this group would be Florida. Just because we haven't seen a lot of them this season, and I think they could probably match the Bruins pretty well, like the Tkachuks of the world, but none of the teams make me super nervous. Pittsburgh doesn't make me nervous. The Islanders do, but they're just such a boring team, and I have a hard time believing in them being successful in the playoffs. So of those teams, I think Florida has the most potential to be a high scoring team that could beat you in different ways, but none of them really keep me up at night.
Buffalo doesn't make you nervous if you're Boston, even though you've beaten them 14-1 over the last 2 games. They don't make you nervous. They don't.
No.
All right. Moving to the Western Conference then. We got some huge games in the Western Conference. We got Edmonton versus LA, Vegas versus LA. We got Calgary playing a bunch of games. Out of those teams in the West, same question in the East. I think Seattle has solidified their spot if they win the games that they have to win. They have seven games left, way more than anybody else. If they win half of them, they get into the playoffs. Winnipeg and Calgary, stone's throw from each other. They each have 5 games left, 2 points apart. Who wins the last wild card, Tim, between Winnipeg and Calgary?
Last time you asked me, I said Winnipeg, but I think I'm changing my tune. Calgary just keeps finding out ways to win, and Winnipeg has not, they were not too long ago, like maybe a month ago, they were first or second in their division. Now they slide all the way down to the second wild card spot fighting for their life. It's not a good look for this team, and I don't think you really see a lot of compete. Meanwhile, not maybe last week, the week before, we said the same thing about Calgary when they got blown out with a chance to beat a team at home and they couldn't even put up a competitive game. So these things go by so quickly. I'm going to say Calgary, though.
Is the game that they play on Wednesday the deciding factor?
If I think it has to be, yeah.
So whoever wins that game makes the playoffs. That's your opinion.
To simplify, I'll say yeah.
I agree. I think whoever wins that game takes that final spot. Even if Calgary wins and they're tied in points, I still think they go on to win. The Jets still have to play the Minnesota Wild. They have to play the Colorado Avalanche. But the Calgary Flames have an easy remaining schedule after that. They get to play the Cupcakes like Arizona, Chicago, San Jose. So that's the game, Tim, that I'm going to be watching. That's a Wednesday night game. Very exciting stuff happening in the NHL coming out to the playoffs. What else are we talking about here, Tim?
Yeah, well, LA clinched the playoff spot last night, and it's really interesting because you look at the Central Division, and none of the teams, it's the only division where no teams have clinched a playoff spot yet. All 3 other division, all 3 spots in each of them have been clinched, but nothing, it's still very, very tight in the Central. We have Minnesota, Colorado, and Dallas all within 1 point of each other, 97, 96, 96. They don't really play each other again in that, you know, among those three teams in the rest of the season. So it's kind of up to them to go out and win those games against the other teams. But Vegas plays in the Pacific. All three of these teams are Vegas, Colorado, Edmonton, within 2 points of each other. And Vegas plays both of those other teams this week, which will be really exciting. So I think there's a lot of, must watch hockey games if this week, if you're a hockey fan that wants to look beyond your own team and see the big games throughout the rest of the season. Cause these guys, they're going to treat it like a playoff game because it basically is.
I think the advantage of finishing first in your division is really big in the Western Conference. I think in the East, it's not as big because Pittsburgh's dangerous. Florida's dangerous. The Islanders are dangerous with the depth that they have and the amount of veterans that they have. They could be scary. The goaltending in the West, if you finish first in your division, you get the luxury of playing Calgary or Seattle or Winnipeg rather than having to face a Colorado, a Dallas, an LA, or an Edmonton. Those are scary teams to me for a first round matchup. So I'm doing everything I can to get that first seed in my division because, man, it would stink if I'm Minnesota and I lose out on that number one seed in the first, like the last game of the season, and I have to go up and face Colorado first round. That would sting. Knowing that I could have had not a cakewalk, but I could have went and played the Seattle Kraken or the Winnipeg Jets or the Calgary Flames, who I've handled handily this year. So it'll be interesting coming down the stretch. I think Vegas will hold that first spot in the Pacific. They've been playing really well of late. I like the way they're gelling here at the end of the season. Jonathan Quick has just been playing fantastic. And in the Central, Tim, I don't know what to think. I really don't. Dallas is been sputtering. Colorado's been playing fantastic. Minnesota, Ryan Reeves, friend of the show, has just been carrying this team. So we'll see what happens. Do you know the prognosis on Kirill Kaprizov, when he's supposed to be back?
I saw a report yesterday that he's already skating. So I don't know if he's, I could be wrong, but I don't know if there's a timetable yet for return, but I would expect he's back in the playoffs.
That'd be fantastic. They can get him back. So keep an eye on that. Keep an eye on the wild card. The West's exciting. Five games left, mostly for everybody. The end of this week's going to be great. Next Monday's show is going to be super fun to talk about. We'll get into the playoff matchups. It'll be great. All right, what else are we going to talk about today, Tim?
Yeah, just as usual, I like to collect these like cool bits of information and stats and everything. And some guys are having really impressive seasons, even more impressive than I think I realized. So talk about Dougie Hamilton first. This is his second season as a New Jersey Devil. He's played 75 games, 69 points, 19 goals. His goals for expected percentage is second among defense. His goals are, I don't even know what that SCF. I don't even know what that second number, but it's another advanced stat that he's first among D-men. Scoring chances for. And the best offensive seasons in their entire career by Chris Letang, Sergei Gonchar, Scott Niedermeyer, and Duncan Keith are lower than what Dougie Hamilton's doing this season when you look at those advanced stats. So pretty impressive number from him, especially since he didn't do as great his first year with that team. Another big defenseman here.
Is this because of Jack Hughes?
Yeah, the Jack Hughes effect.
Is that what it is? Or is it because he finally got some help on the back end? Maybe John Marino came in last year, I believe. Yeah. Ryan Graves was there last year. But it seems like everybody wearing a Devils uniform is playing good this year. They're like the Bruins. They're having a great season across the board.
I'm telling you, I think they're going to beat the Rangers in the first round. I really do.
I would totally believe it. They have exactly what it takes. They're strong down the middle. Hirschire, Hughes, Halla. Look at the Triple H under his Helmsley. Did they have a t-shirt in New Jersey, the Triple H? They do now. All right. What else, Tim?
Yeah, another big defenseman. Everyone knows how good of a season Erik Karlsson's having, but do you really know how good of a season he's having? Because tonight, the other night, he had his fifth four-point game of the season. He had 5 4-point games in his entire career before this season. All those numbers, all those Norris trophies, all those record-breaking seasons, he's that much better this year. 4-point game, and compared to 5 his whole career, which is crazy. Another crazy stat that
pump the brakes on this Erik Karlsson thing. When you look into the advanced stats with him, he's sacrificing every inch of his effort on the ice on the offensive end. He's playing terrible in his D zone. He's awful, Tim.
The clips of him,
his
being
goals
burned.
Expected.
Yeah.
Oh, he's getting burned nightly.
Not even trying. I thought he was hurt at one point.
No,
that's just how he plays.
He is just going all out on the offensive end. Why not? You're on a garbage team and he's trying to get 100 points. I get it, but it's laughable the amount of effort he spends in the defensive zone. It's criminal. I've changed my tone. He should not win the Norris. No. Even if he hits 100, no. When all these other defensemen were getting 100 points, they were on good teams. They were making Stanley Cup runs. And it's just, he should not win the Norris. It should go to somebody else, but he probably will, because everybody loves the stats, loves the big numbers, 100 points. But it's a joke how little he tries in the defensive end.
It's funny because I had the opposite reaction. I've been like saying, I don't think he deserves to win it. And now I'm looking at, maybe he is that much better than everyone else, at least offensively. The second stat here, a defenseman in the NHL has scored 4+ points in an NHL games 21 times this season. He has five of them, and 16 other guys have won. No one else has done it twice. He's done it 5 times. It really is just kind of lapping the competition when it comes to offensive production from a defenseman here.
Yeah.
And actually, a lot of it has to speak with the NHL goals up in total. So I saw Pierre LeBrun tweeted this out. The NHL is averaging 6.37 total goals per game, which is the highest average since 1993-94 season when it was 6.48. Really, really crazy. What do you attribute that goal scoring to?
Everything. Players are better. I don't know. The way the game's played now, it's a run and gun league. Everybody wants to score. I believe it. Here's my question. I would like to see the ratings. Have the ratings increased? That's what I want to know, because that's what it's all about. Are we getting eyeballs on the game? That's what they said would happen if we scored more goals. Maybe there are. I hope there is, because I like watching goals. It's fun.
I saw a tweet this morning that was Swayman and Omark have done more to grow their game and their fan base with their goalie hugs after every win than Connor McDavid has done doing anything. And
who tweeted that? You?
I'm sure it was a Bruins fan. But think about like the engagement that happens, as opposed to like the best superstar in the world that doesn't even want a microphone in front of his face. You know, we talked about that.
That's dumb. I don't believe that for 1 second, because they have a little silly hug after every game. Now I've got to watch because they're hugging.
How much is this? People stay on. They don't turn the TV off until after the hug.
Whoever's staying on that long is already a diehard fan, Bruins fan. Got to watch the hug.
It's true. ESPN cut the broadcast off the other night, and they got a lot of flack for it on Twitter. Chris Letang. That's
a whole other thing, a lot of flack. There's probably like 6 people who said something, and then all these reporters write articles about it. They didn't get a lot of flack. You and your friends probably tweeted at him, "Hey, man, I want to see him hug."
That is exactly what happened. Chris Letang.
It is. It might not be you, but that's exactly what happened.
Chris Letang reached 1,000 goals, 1,000 games this weekend, which surprised me.
Going back to your Dougie Hamilton thing, because you mentioned Chris Letang, who would you rather have in their prime? Letang, Gonchar, Niedermeyer, Keith, or Dougie Hamilton? Dougie's at the bottom of the list for me.
I might put him ahead of Gonchar.
Just because Gonchar was not in your time. Gonchar was a fantastic defenseman.
Oh, no, I watched Gonchar. Oh, yeah, he was on the Bruins, he was the Penguins. Yeah, I watched him a lot. You're not going to gotch me, John. I got you.
Well, because he was on the Bruins. Of course I watch him.
Yeah, Chuck Kovacsu. Yeah, I mean, probably. I don't watch Dougie every night. Really, all I watched from him was when he was the Bruins, and he was super frustrating then. He wasn't that good at that point.
So you would take all other three. And it's okay. It's a not a terrible thing, but you would take all the other ones except for Gonchar.
Well, the question's really not about my opinion. The question is about how much you value advanced stats versus like what's actually happening with the eye test, right? That's like an ongoing, it's a much bigger conversation.
I agree. I might take him over Gonchar. But the other three, I'm taking them over Dougie Hamilton. All right. Sorry. I just wanted to get your opinion.
I asked you once who you'd take in their prime, Keith or Letang. You said Keith, that it wasn't close. Do you stand by that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Were you surprised?
I love Duncan Keith's mean streak. I think he adds another asset to his game because he's unpredictable. The guy's a loose cannon. So that's why they're both gifted offensively. I get that. I think Keith has a higher end motor. He can just go longer. But yeah, they're both great defensemen. You know what I mean?
Chris Letang, is he a Hall of Famer?
I'd have to dig into it a little bit, but right now I'd probably lean towards yes.
Yeah, I would say yeah. I mean, 3 cups. I'm looking. Do you know if he's won a Norris?
I don't think he has.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
But he seems to be having a good career. I don't know. I don't have his numbers in front of me. But yeah, I would lean towards yes.
Yeah, no Norris. No really individual awards except for All-Stars, but
everybody has an All-Star.
John, everyone in the league gets one, right?
At least one.
He was there in 2016.
Was he? I beat his behind.
Yeah. Who was the one you had chasing you on the breakaway? Was that Duchene? Right.
Yeah, one of the fastest players in the NHL. I left him in my dust.
No big deal. Actually, not to pump your tires, but when the way you protected that puck on that, when I was like watching the game in 2016, I was like, okay, John Scott can play. He's not some goon. That was more than any other thing. That little move you did with your one arm, you won me over.
Then I ripped a top shelf on Braden Holtby. Or was it Holtby or somebody else? Like some all-star goaltender I did. Yeah. All right, what else? Your Bruins, fourth team in history to win 60 games.
Yeah, and I think they have, I forget the exact number, but if they win something like three out of their last five games, they'll be the winningest team in NHL history. So,
wow, cool. That's pretty neat. This day and age, salary cap era, that's hard to do. Do you think they will buck? Well, you obviously do. It'll be interesting to see if they buck the President's Trophy trend. President's Trophy winner hasn't won the cup in a long time. I think 10 years or so.
Yeah, and I know every team says this, you know, but they really... You're going to roll your eyes, but everyone has talked about how special this group is, how strong the locker room is. It just feels different. Even guys like Krejci and Bergeron are saying it have been around forever. And
oh, it's just super different. Yeah.
It just different. Feels, it does feel different. I mean, they beat, I can go on. But another cool thing, another little record pass, Jason Robertson passed Mike Modano for a single season record, 94 points, best in franchise history. Modano had the record with 93 and he was there in the building. So he kind of passed the torch. It's pretty neat.
Does that seem low? 94 points for a franchise?
Yeah.
94, Tim. That's not a lot in the grand scheme of things.
How many points do you have in your career?
Well, I'm talking for a franchise.
I know. When do the Stars, when were they founded?
They've been there for a good 25, 30 years, I think. They've had some good players play for them. 60 years.
Yeah.
Wow. So that seems low. They haven't had a 100-point score. Does he get 100 at some point in his career, Jason Robertson?
Yes. Yeah.
Boy, you're so convinced. They haven't had one in 60 years almost. And he gets it.
Well, now you got a, 23-year-old with 90? He has 95 points now. You don't think he could probably get it, do it this year?
No, I think he will. Don't give me slack. I'm asking you.
I said and you gave me gruff.
Well, you said it with such certainty. Oh, yeah, of course. It's like, not of course.
Yes, of course.
I do think he gets it, but I don't know. Maybe he won't. Maybe Joe Pavelski won't be his line mate next year because Joe's not getting any younger. He's no spring chicken. We'll see. I'm surprised it's only 94. That's all I'm saying. So anyways, I think that's it. You got anything else, Tim?
No, we're watching these games tonight and tomorrow, and we'll be back Wednesday.
Very exciting stuff. Are we getting Ryan Graves? Have you reached out to him?
Yeah, I gotta arrange the date, but I gotta figure out which days are off.
All right, we'll get Ryan Graves on the show this week. That'll be fun. And I'm honest, if you have a issue with me, I think it'd be fun to debate some people. Maybe not during playoffs, but we'll line it up at some point and we'll have a nice conversation. Whether you're a Leafs fan, who else do I rip on? Everybody, bring it on. And we'll have a nice conversation. You'll get to go on the show. It'll be fun stuff. Right, Tim?
Yes. And I actually did I set up the voicemail thing over the weekend too. And this is going to be like, so people can call in. Cause that was the thing that they said the most that they wanted was a chance to call in and engage with the show. So we'd be able to handle more of those than we would actually have guests on it. So I think it'll be really good. So if you want to call in, leave a voicemail. The number is 980-522-8146. Just leave a voicemail and we'll play some of the best ones on the show. Probably coming up with that 500th episode in a couple of weeks.
You could also call 781-308.
I still get texts sometimes from 3 years ago.
If you want to know Tim's number, go back to one of our earlier shows. It's on there somewhere. You could text him. But what's that number again, Tim? Give it one more time.
980-522-8146. It's all over our socials, too. So give us a call, and we're going to be doing a lot more of that in the future.
I love it. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Give us a call. Give us a call. We'll talk to you guys on Wednesday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.